I love that line. Put to death.
Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak.
It's Sunday, August 9th, 2009. Time for your Gitmo Nation audio publication, episode number 120.
This is No Agenda.
Coming to you from the minimum security containment cell, which houses the Crackpot Command Center in Gitmo Nation West, still under threat of eminent domain demolition. In San Francisco, I'm Adam Curry.
And I'm John C. Dvorak.
It's Crackpot and Buzzkill in the morning.
The hell is that?
I don't know. You were falling all over yourself, and so I figured we better finish it up.
There's plenty of time. I wasn't falling all over myself. I just had a little pregnant pause there.
I know. I always thought there was. I missed the beat in there because I thought there was that you said that, and then there would be some beat, but there was nothing. It was just dead air.
And I'm Adam Curry, and then that's when you're supposed to come in with coming from wherever the Buzzkill bunker is.
You want to do it again?
Not necessarily.
All right.
Hey, John, how are you?
Good. Yeah. It's going to be hot today.
It looks beautiful today. Well, out where you are, it's going to be really hot. In the city, it'll be just nice, and there'll be nice breeze and a nice sun.
I don't know. It's hard to say. I think the city's going to be pretty much the same.
It was beautiful yesterday.
Oh, it was a little. It was good here, but it wasn't great.
Hey, you know, I got a call on Friday from. Did you ever hook up with Taxi Eric in Amsterdam when you were there?
Yeah, he took me to the airport.
Right. Now, does this seem like a pretty stable guy, reasonable, down to earth guy?
Yeah, yeah, he's a little probably multitasks a little too much.
Well, what do you mean? What is that supposed to mean?
Well, I mean, he's on the phone, he's on the radio, he's doing 20 things at once. In fact, he almost ran us into a lorry.
So he calls me on Friday. He says, "Hey, dude, you know, like my daughter's coming back from Spain. We have to leave on Sunday, but you know she has the swine flu, which of course is called Mexican flu. And I'm really worried. I don't think I should go on vacation. I can't leave her alone. She's like 19 years old." And he was really freaking out because they've got this whole thing going now in Gitmo Nation East over there where they have a couple celebrities who have been quarantined for 4 days. Quarantined. And even though he, you know, I've talked to him about this many times, he was still really freaked out. He actually called me to say, "Oh man, what should I do? And you know, what's going to happen?" You know, and everyone is now saying in the media in Holland, "Oh, you know, the Spain is the hotbed. All the kids are there hanging out together. They're all on vacation. They're all going to come back, and they're going to die." And I really had to talk him down. It took me like half an hour.
I said, talk him down.
I did.
Like he was on the ledge.
he was flipping out. I was like, "Wow, man!" And you know, and he's a pretty stable guy. So,
well, it doesn't take much to get the public riled up. I mean, you know, the Germans learned that from World War One.
Really?
You know, one of the things.
What did they do in World War One? How did they rile up the public?
Well, what happened was
town speakers.
The Nazis, specifically Goebbels.
Well, that was World War II, John.
You're not letting me finish.
I'm sorry.
The Nazis, specifically Goebbels, looked over at the propaganda that was developed during World War I by the Americans mainly, because we had, you know, essentially we're the ones who invented public relations for all practical purposes, and we've developed a lot of these techniques. And so during World War I, we had put out, in fact, you can look these up. I think there, many of them are in the Library of Congress and elsewhere, and they're public domain. And there's these posters showing the Germans as giant gorillas raping women and just all this really nasty stuff to get the public all riled up so we would buy into actually going to this idiotic World War I, which, you know, cost us a bunch of people and
a bunch, questionable. Just a bunch of people.
Questionable to do it, you know, it was just a mess. It was one of the worst, you know, wars in terms of just bloodbath.
It was truly the Great War, right? That's what they called it.
Yeah. And so so Goebbels says, you know, this is, you know, if this is that easy, he essentially made an art of doing the same thing in Germany based on World War I and how the Germans were portrayed in the whole thing. And they essentially created a propaganda machine. And it turns out
it worked pretty well for a while.
It works really well all the time.
of course, you need a lot of stupid people in order for that to work, which, of course, is exactly the same group of people who you can then turn into a revolution to fight that.
You can.
We're trying.
Well,
not very hard.
Not to take a shot of, adjuvant.
Before I forget, a quick catch-up. William Tildesley, one of our listener producers out there. Remember we were talking about Law and Order and how they were all over the... what was it, the measles vaccination, and that was that whole episode that we discussed last time?
Yeah, the measles episode.
Yeah, the measles episode. And we were trying to figure out, you know, what are the ties, you know, and I think I asserted that, you know, an expensive drama series like this, it's not unthinkable that money's flowing in from somewhere to get these absolutely propaganda scripts onto the air.
Right. I think when you really extrapolated your idea, I think what you were implying was that the drug companies, which right now are, I think, must be doing half the advertising on television for these ridiculous screwball restless leg syndrome and other drugs, would possibly be
grow longer eyelashes.
Yeah, that's another one.
Yeah,
who would take a drug for that? I mean, it's just doesn't sound right.
Brooke Shields, apparently. If Brooke does it, everybody can do it. But yeah, I mean, particularly the news networks, just pay attention for it. Don't tune out when the commercials come on. Tune in at that moment and write it down even. And you'll see that, you know, I think it's even more, John. It may be a higher percentage of advertising on the news networks is from pharmaceutical products.
Yeah, on the during the news hour, of course, one of the things you run into on television is targeted advertising. So they try to figure out who's watching the news, and you can kind of watch the ads and figure out what demographic is primary to that show based on the ads, right? Mm-hmm. So if it's all about, if every ad's about
constipation, it's all about Viagra.
Or Viagra, you know, it's like you're an older demo.
And you should turn off your TV quickly. Anyway, to get back to the story, Dick Wolf produces Law and Order, and as I said, our producer William Tildesley sent in, it's actually from Wikipedia, so take it with the grain of salt you must. In addition to having been a classmate of former President George W. Bush, Wolf was the employer of Fred Thompson, who sought the Republican nomination for president in 2008 with the help of the national attention he gained playing the district attorney on Law and Order. That connection we could have made, the Fred Thompson connection.
Yeah.
Wolf supported Thompson in his bid, as he did Bush's, and has been reported that he contributed money to Thompson even before he officially announced that he was running. So there's probably a quid pro quo in there or something. But
I don't know if Thompson's got anything to do with the drug companies.
Don't these guys all have something to do with the drug companies? Doesn't every single politician take some money from a pharmaceutical company somewhere?
Well, yeah, and they all take money from healthcare companies too. But I don't know. I just think that measles show was something rigged of some. It was something screwy about it. It was way too much propaganda in there.
Have you been following the deal that the White House apparently has made with the pharmaceutical industry, John?
No.
This is the and the reporting is lackluster at best because, of course, we don't actually know what was discussed in the Roosevelt Room. Where Rahm Emanuel, of course, and I presume the president, have had their conversations with Pharma, which is this organization of the pharmaceutical industry, PHRMA. They've dropped the A for extra asshole convenience. Here's the deal, as I understand it. The pharmaceutical industry has agreed to reduce the cost of healthcare, so drugs. actually, they're doing a drug deal. By $80 billion over 10 years, which is, okay, you know, I'm not quite sure what the total pharmaceutical industry take is per year, but so that's $8 billion a year, not insignificant. But what I understand so first of all, they're saying the president promised us $80 billion, and you're hearing Pelosi and other Democrats saying, well, you know, we'll see if it remains 80, blah, blah. So there's a little bit of friction there, but the deal then seems to be that on the Medicare side, there would be no caps on pricing of medication that the pharma industry could charge for Medicare.
What? So,
yes. Yeah, exactly. And by the way, this is from the president, who, of course, lambasted drug companies during his campaign. And now he's just sitting down and doing it's a drug deal. It is literally a drug deal.
I'm sure that's not going to help these. I mean, the people that are moaning and groaning the most are Medicare, Medicaid people at these town hall meetings, which have been turned into a fiasco.
Yeah, and it is a. I mean, yes, it is a fiasco. I'm not quite. Maybe I'm missing something, but and I'm sure everyone has seen this because this is the entire newscast is all about the AstroTurf and, you know, right-wing groups and pharmaceutical shills who are standing up and making a big mess of these town hall meetings. But isn't that exactly what democracy is supposed to be, where you organize and you organize your opinions, your thoughts, and your side, both left, right, center, whatever?
I mean, don't we express them? Yeah.
Don't we have the SEIU, the unions, very well organized, I might add, with nice looking signs and great websites, and they've got all kinds of stuff going.
One of the main SEIU guys is also one of the main Acorn guys, by the way.
Well, so what exactly is the SEIU?
And Service Employees International Union.
Okay, but who's in it? Who's a service employee?
It's the same people that would be. I happen to be.
Is that AFTRA as well? Is that
AFTRA? No, it'd be the same.
Is that
as
hookers?
AFSCME.
What?
AFSCME, American Federation of Service State County Municipal Employees. Same.
The government.
That's the same. Government. Yeah.
But don't they already have great health care? Government employees.
No.
Oh.
Some do. Yeah.
Okay.
Some don't. Well, actually, now that you mention it, as most SEIU people would probably, yeah, they would. It seems to me.
But most of them are government employees, or am I misunderstanding that? Who is a member of a union that belongs to the service employee? What is a service employee? Is it a waiter?
Well, let's take a look at their website and see who they cater to.
Because I've been looking at the SEIU, and by the way, we missed a fantastic opportunity. The title of the webpage, which I will post in the show notes at noagenda.mevio.com, is SEIU Mythbusters Call with HHS Secretary Sebelius. And this was a conference call, which we could have attended. I've looked for audio. I can't find anything online. Of course, people jumped in and have written about it, saying that Sebelius, who, of course, is the health secretary, and Bilderberger.
I saw her the other day, by the way, giving a talk on C-SPAN. And by the way, people out there, we watch C-SPAN for you.
Yes.
And I thought she was kind of creepy.
No, she's extremely creepy. Did you see her on the... Well, I'll get to that later. But anyway, so in this call, and I've only seen transcripts of it, she called her brothers and sisters to arms, more or less, saying, we've got to go, you know, bust these myths. And the SEIU website, SEIU.org, you know, they're praising the flag at whitehouse.gov blog post. So it's kind of goes against my grain personally. But I just like to know exactly who the service employees are and what they do.
I'm trying to see what groups are. See, the problem is there's four major unions: the service employees, AFSCME, and out here there's something like Cal something or
What's
other.
AFSCME?
I can't remember.
What's AFSCME? Here, members.
American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees.
And so this is like, so it is all government.
Well, that AFSCME is for sure, but AFSCME is like one of the is not as powerful as SEIU, which is actually harder to become a. When we were unionizing the air pollution district, we were actually refused. They didn't want to talk to us. We ended up joining AFSCME because there was one of them, Cal something or other. I can't remember the name of this
what,
one.
What were you doing at the time, John?
I was an air pollution inspector.
Oh, of course.
This was during the last depression.
Hey, good job, by the way. Good inspections. You really cleaned
you
that
no
shit
idea
up. You cleaned that
how
shit
bad
up.
It
didn't
was
you?
Here before, or whenever.
Okay.
All right. So I'll
let you slide. It doesn't even say who.
I'm trying to figure out who. It'll be in here. I'm digging. I'm guessing it's like the post office.
Oh.
Well, here's a nurse alliance. There must be some nurses in SEIU then.
Teachers, perhaps? Teachers?
I guess the nurses really need the health. Doesn't make any sense.
So anyway, the point being that
somebody in the chat room might know who's
I'm sure someone does. The point being that you know, so there are rowdy town hall meetings going on, which, by the way, I love. You know, they're not all supposed to be these orchestrated things that President Obama does with people who have, you know, he knows who to call on. The questions are pre-screened. It's 80 to 90, maybe even 100%. People who are for his agenda when he's speaking at these, they're all civil and orderly. And of course, what a real debate about is, you know, is about getting in people's face and yelling and screaming. And, you know, I do believe that you should be able to have some kind of order in any type of discussion. But I don't know if it's really a discussion where, you know, someone stands up in front of the podium and says, here's what we're going to do, ask a question, then maybe does or does not answer the question. People get angry. People get riled up. And that can come from both sides. But now to say that it's being organized, I mean, the SEIU is just as much an organizer of pro-healthcare.
Well, they're more of an organizer than the...
Yeah, they look very, very professional. But then you get, you know, Nancy Pelosi saying AstroTurf, and I saw some of them with swastikas. Like, okay, you know, that's a little...
Here's a guy. One of our listeners is in the SEIU, and he's a county employee.
So that's
exactly
government.
Why the SEIU doesn't just, I mean, why are they for this bill, which is, I think there's, you know, the problem with these unions, because I've gone to these meetings, they have these executive meetings where they train you, you know, so you can learn about, you know, how you're supposed to do things mm-hmm. as a union. And a lot of it has to, it seems to be, I think the unions have been largely taken over by other interests. And because they tell you, you know, it's just almost corrupt. That's a whole show. But it seems to me that it doesn't make a lot of sense for me for the SEIU and ACORN to be in bed together on this healthcare thing when they already have healthcare, unless it's to pull the healthcare, you know, is to shift the burden somehow to benefit somebody.
You know what it's about, John? No, John. Yes, I know what it's about. I just figured it out.
Jobs, 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 and jobs. Let's vote for jobs.
That's what it's about, man. Jobs. weren't the unions huge supporters of President Obama during the election? Didn't they give him lots and lots of money?
Yeah, but that's because the unions traditionally give the money to the Democrats who cater to them.
Okay. How about auto workers? Are they in the SEIU?
No, that's the
auto workers union.
The UAW, okay. United Auto. Well, I was a member of that too, by the way, which I think.
Wait a minute. What were you doing at the time, John? Putting doors on Chevys?
I've actually been in two different locals of the UAW, and
tell me, what were you doing? What kind of job?
I was
did you
working
have?
On an assembly line during the summer when I was a student in school.
Right, putting doors on Chevys. What was your actual job?
I didn't get the door job.
What job did you have on the assembly line? Tell me.
Well,
cool.
One of them was making these hose assemblies, sub assemblies for a device that oiled a high temperature clutch on an International Harvester truck.
Are those the ones that got recalled in 1973 because they were blowing up because of some faulty tubing?
It wouldn't surprise me. And so that's actually a story there, because I was like I'm doing this stupid thing. You have to blow out this gob of goo that's inside with this high pressure hose, and it takes forever. And so the thing flies out, and a couple of them got through without being perfectly
without being
done.
Blown out.
And so I got called into the office, like faulty faulty part.
Dvorak, come here for a second. I got to talk to you, son. And what did he say?
He said I had some faulty parts and I was getting chewed out, and I had to. And I also my speed was too slow. I wasn't going fast enough.
Yes, that's why the show lasts an hour and a half.
Hoses. So anyway, so it goes. So I get to chewed out for this, but he didn't fire me, and I went back to work, and I just kind of upped the ante a little bit. And that's the year, by the way, I learned that the next time I was going to get any job whatsoever is either going to be as a receiving clerk or an inspector, which I did the next year, as a matter of fact. I became a receiving clerk, and that's the best job because you're not responsible for productivity.
Did you have a stapler?
A red one.
Yeah.
So anyway, but let me finish the story. So I was always kind of irked by the fact that I couldn't keep up the pace, because I mean, I was working as fast as I could, and I was young, you know, I should have been able to keep, but I couldn't. two or three years later, there's a big news report about a big amphetamine bust at this place. Thinking, well, that's the reason.
I wasn't taking, you weren't taking enough dope. Awesome.
Anyway, so that's American productivity is based largely on amphetamines.
And thank you. That's a sound drop if I've ever heard one. What fine automotive company was that?
Well, that was International Harvester. But I'd worked for International Harvester, Trailmobile, and Ford. Although the Ford experience was kind of sketchy, and they showed up on my employee breakdown is that to never hire this guy again. Because with Ford, I got this job at Ford, and it was a graveyard shift, and it was doing some maintenance, and then but then the next day, this is during the summer when you were going to school, and either in high school or college, and you can get these jobs nowadays. Kids can't get anything to do anyway. So the next day, I got a call from Smirnoff. To work on the line of the bottling line.
Mm-hmm. And they headhunted you off the auto assembly line?
No, I had applied for jobs here and there, and then one day I got the Ford job, and then the next day I got the Smirnoff job. So I decided I'll take both jobs.
Now that's a true American right there, ladies and gentlemen.
So they were both full-time 8-hour jobs, and it just turned out that the timing was just right enough that I could do both of them.
Yeah, you could liquor up on the graveyard shift, and I'd hit the methamphetamines in the morning, and you were perfect.
In the morning. Well, I probably should have done it that way. But so what happened was I took the Ford job and I'm working the grave, and then I go right to the other job and I would work that, and then I'd go home and try to get some sleep. And I did this for about a month.
Yeah.
I was making plenty of money because it was, you know, these are real jobs with real money.
Yeah.
So I'm walking out of the Ford plant through the gate, and I had a white flash. It was unbelievable. I still remember. It was just like a flash of white. And so I'm thinking, this is not good. This doesn't seem right.
Is that when they took you up and probed you rectally?
So I got this white flash. So 2 days later, I had a full-blown case of mononucleosis.
Wow.
And I had to couldn't do either job, but I went on disability or whatever, some full pay. And it was the rest
excellent.
Of the stuff,
for two jobs, full pay for two jobs.
I don't know if I got the full pay for the Smirnoff. I don't remember that because the state gives you the benefits. I think you just get the one, you get one big check. And so I was getting so that's why Ford wouldn't rehire me because it comes out of some fund.
Yeah, I found out yesterday, you know, because I'm now employed in the U.S. by Mevio. We have unemployment insurance at the company. Did you know that?
Mm-hmm.
And all you have to do is pay the taxes over, the company pays for it, but you just pay the taxes or something like that. And if you have, or it's disability, short-term, long-term disability, and unemployment. It's like some huge big deal. It's amazing.
Well, you have to, all employers in California have to provide these things. But it's an insurance. I mean, it's not like, you know.
Yeah, but it's an insurance for like 80% of your paycheck.
Yeah, no.
That's good.
No. Yeah, it is good. So anyway.
I hurt myself. I have to stay home.
So I had this.
All right, so let's get back to these damn unions, because I still don't understand it. I just don't understand who they are, what they're doing, what the big deal is. They clearly must have see some benefit, and they totally understand the health care bill better than I do, or better than anyone else on television can do explaining it. Otherwise, they wouldn't be so passionate about defending it. So I'm just interested in this organization who Kathleen Sebelius calls her brothers and sisters and is calling them to arms to bust the myth. The myths, I should say, which of course is not really a myth, because I believe that senior citizens are correct, and we've discussed this, and this is what socialized medicine is all about. Indeed, at a certain point, someone makes a decision, or there's a book, or there's a regulation, or there's something written down that says, you know, you are at the end of your life, and we're not going to provide anything anymore except a nice way to end. And even that, of course, is questionable, but that's what it is. You know, where are you going to put the resources? You can't keep prolonging people's lives forever and ever and ever when you need health care for younger people, children, who have their entire productivity, productive lives ahead of them. So that's the choice that's made. It's very simple. Oh, and by the way, everyone who voted for President Obama saying, yeah, we need health care, you are now the fuckers who are going to have to pay for it. And now it's, oh, not my backyard. I don't want it. Well, I got to pay for it, 50% tax. Which, of course, is what it's going to be. We're going to have a base rate of 50% tax.
So, yeah.
Yeah, so serves you right. Told you so.
Yeah, well, it's the way it is.
Yeah, live with it.
We have to, I mean, I have mixed feelings about the whole thing because our healthcare system is not doing this. I mean, if you start looking at either the morbidity rates, children's birth mortality rates, and all the rest of it, our numbers are not that good compared to any country in Europe. We don't beat one country on anything. We don't have life expectancy that's as good as anybody in Europe, especially the French. And we're not up to par. We suck.
It's because
makes our healthcare system the world's greatest? It stinks.
Yeah, but see, I don't think it's the healthcare system. I believe that is a different problem, that we are eating crap.
That doesn't explain infant mortality, eating crap.
What are you talking about? Of course it does.
Okay, you're right. If mom's eating crap.
Yeah, if mom's eating crap, you know, what John, have we discussed baby formula on this show a couple times? What kind of crap is in the baby formula from China?
You know, in China. Well, okay, but the point is that we're not number one by any means.
But I'm just disagreeing that it has to do with healthcare. I believe it has more to do with how we live. And what we're,
I think the world,
you are what you ate. You are what you eat. That's just the end of the story. And by the way, the European Union, this story just came in last night. I'm going to look it up because I wasn't quite prepared for it. They have stopped all imports of soy from the United States because of traces of GMO corn in the soy.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
What's it doing in there?
Well, that's a good question, but it comes in through. So they've turned a tanker around in Italy, or I'm not sure if they've turned it around, but they've stopped it from unloading. Same goes for Germany. Now, of course, this is a problem because we need this to feed our cattle. I thought I saved that story. I guess I didn't. I'll have to look for it again. After August, this supplies are going to start running short. Is that all you have to say?
Well, none of it surprises me.
Well, it does kind of surprise me because. I guess not. No, yeah, you're right. I guess not. But how does the corn, genetically modified corn, get into soy? Is that normal?
No, I don't know. That needs to be explained to me. I don't get it. Somebody just sent me a Skype message saying that the Canadians also eat crap. The fact of the matter is actually the Canadians don't eat as much crap as we do. And the Canadians, by the way, kick our asses when it comes to morbidity and mortality rates and birth, all the rest of it. I mean, they totally kick our ass.
I still don't think it has to do with healthcare.
I'm just saying.
Yeah. Okay. And by the way, so you have health care that we provide. John, we've discussed this. I have health care that we provide. Does it suck?
No, it doesn't suck at all, but it's like, you know...
Are you paying too much for it? Do you feel that it's too expensive?
Well, it is expensive. If you pay for health... If you're like an individual, it's extremely expensive. But if you're getting it through a company, it's not that bad. But it's still not cheap. In fact, I think a lot of these companies, smaller ones in particular, are all for this Obama idea so they can get out from under this.
Which means what? They have less profit profit?
The companies will have more profit because the responsibility for healthcare gets shifted to the government.
So at the end of the day, it's not actually the healthcare, it's the scam between it's a massive scam. It's really a Ponzi scheme when you think about it. It's doctors who are on the payroll prescribing shit you may or may not need or maybe just doesn't even work. Those prices are jacked up by the pharmaceutical industry and they're insured by the insurance industry. It's a huge scam.
No, there's a, in fact, a pharmacist we used to have down the street here in Albany, the, said, that he noticed, and he's like 90. And he said that he's noticed that once the insurance scam began, which was back in the 50s. And
that's when it all went downhill. That's when it started to blow.
Yeah, it says once it began, then all of a sudden prices started going up and things started changing. It used to be when I was a kid, you used to be able to have, doctor used to make a house call.
Even when I was a kid, a doctor would make a house call. And then I remembered everyone saying, oh, your doctor makes house calls. And they were still kind of making house calls. But yeah, that doesn't really, well, I wouldn't say that. In the Netherlands, I think, you know, you still, they've set it up pretty well over there. There are absolute caps on what can be charged for medicine, and doctors aren't rich over there, and they in their socialized system, and it's been going for a long time. But they're changing that now too. They just changed it where, in fact, everyone's, it's skyrocketed because now you have to have your own private insurance, and you know, that country is so screwed. They have no idea. They're like the beta test for all of this evil shit we get over here. Speaking of which, just to break it up, John, this has been circling around the internet. Vincent Xavier, have you ever heard of this radio dude?
Yeah.
Okay, what do you
in
know
fact,
about
I made a clip of what you, I know what you're going to play.
Is this the Washington, D.C. thing?
This. We blogged this. This is the guy who says that we're going to get bombed on. There's a bomb under Washington, D.C., yeah. And it's going to blow in October 22nd or something like that.
Well, why don't I play your clip then? Because I have the YouTube video here, which I'll put in the show notes.
I don't have. I didn't send you the clip from him.
Oh, really? Well, let me play it for you. Here's a little bit.
And let me just say this to you tonight. Something that I know, not something that I believe.
Is this guy like a Christian broadcaster or something? Okay.
Yeah, but he's only got two channels in his giant network.
Well, he's got more than we got.
Yeah, but we have more listeners.
No.
It says you.
Tonight.
No, yes, we do. But he, oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
To my assertion.
Does he have an AM network, or what does he have?
Yeah, he's got two AM stations someplace.
Okay, but it's local, it's not big?
I don't know, they're here and there.
There is, in Washington, D.C., an atomic bomb set in that city that will be detonated. I know that. And I will say it again.
I love this guy.
In Washington, D.C., there is underground an atomic bomb that will be detonated in Washington, D.C., that will level Washington, D.C. to the ground, where there will not be left one stone upon another.
Now, what's interesting about this, because you listen to this, and later on he talks about, you know, that God gave him the date, which, of course, is like, whoops, okay.
Yeah, right, there goes the credibility.
Let me see if I can find that piece. It's right near the end somewhere. Hold on.
But then how can you confirm a great strike against the heart of the United States? What chapter do I find that in the Bible?
There you go. But when you think about all of these different services moving out to Colorado, you know, there's a lot of movement going on, and it's particularly moving away from the Capitol. You know, I think to yourself, well, you never know. And then, I love the bit where somewhere in this clip he said, and I'll put it in the show notes, somewhere in the clip he says, it's not a good idea to travel around October 11th. Yeah, no shit.
Well, I'll bet you that even though this guy's nuts, and this is probably this is all bogus. I'll bet you a bunch of people will avoid.
I'll avoid it. Are you kidding me?
I avoid it all the time, so it's no big deal. But
oh man,
probably a good time to get a hotel room cheap
in DC.
Yeah,
this is other thing that's kind of bothering me. It kind of got snowed under. Because of the Twitter outage, which is by itself is kind of a weird story, because you know you read on Slashdot that it was coming from the UK, and then you read in more mainstream, I guess Slashdot is almost mainstream, you read that it was coming from Russia, and it was, you know, some against some blogger who of course had a live journal, which is not exactly the same as a blog. But it was not a typical denial of service attack. It's just a lot of noise, and that of course is what we were witnessing last week on Sunday when we were having trouble twittering. But this computer programmer who walked into a gym and shot it up and killed three women and then himself. George Sodini. Have you been following this story? Did you hear about it at all?
I just read the one item, and I didn't go any further than that.
Okay, so here's what's kind of weird about it. George Sodini worked for K&L Gates. K&L Gates is a very famous, very powerful law firm. They've got a former lawyer. Well, I guess not. You're never a former lawyer, but they've got lawyers who are. They're all over Washington. They're running the water. They're running all kinds of stuff. And this, of course, is a part Bill Gates' dad's firm. I don't even think there's a. I think every president has had conferences with them. This is a big ass law firm. You know anything about K&L Gates?
I think the name has been changed recently to that. Because I gave a deposition to that group a few years ago in the Lindo's case, and I had to go in there and get grilled by their lawyers in their offices in Seattle, and I came away with a couple of very interesting beer coasters with the logo on there.
Good, scan them and put them up, because I think these guys they may actually be evil.
Well, they seem like normal lawyers to me, but which means yes.
Exactly. So there's a lot of tie-ins, and the Sodini was a senior programmer, computer programmer for the company. He had recently had a promotion, and so this guy goes into a gym in Pittsburgh and kills these three innocent women, then himself, and it. All the so-called evidence, like his blog, which of course the mainstream media is calling it an online journal. And if you look at georgesodini.com, if this guy was a computer programmer and this is what he called a blog, then, he should have just shot himself first. This looks like such a setup of crap. And then there's these YouTube videos that are floating around and they're really creepy, but it's not your typical creepy. I'm going to go kill somebody. In fact, quite the opposite. He was a member of, and actually I distilled some of this. I was trying to figure out, if you listen, let me play one of these videos. Because it's rather interesting. Hold on. I want you to listen to what he said. So this is the video that has been posted everywhere, and this is supposed to prove that he's a creepy guy. So it's him in front of a mirror in his basement. Not a mirror, I guess he's got the camera. I'm not quite sure what the setup is. But just listen to what he says for a second.
It is easy for me to hide from my emotions for one more day. Take a long drive in the car, listen to some music, daydream, or just do some mundane task around the house that really doesn't need to be done, that's not too important. And there you go, one more day. And one more day turns into one more year. Now, RDS says that I have approximately maybe 15 more years to be successful at this. And when I heard that, I wanted to continue immediately to start moving on this. I didn't realize.
So that sounds creepy, right?
What's he talking about?
Well, so the clue here is RDS. And I was like, right. What is he talking about, RDS? So not hard if you do a little bit of Googling, because, of course, there's another video where he shows his... By the way, his house is meticulous. I think he was making like 200 grand a year. This is not... And, he had just finished his basement. He's got a computer in the bedroom, a computer in the living room, Cat 5 networked through the basement. He's explaining all this stuff. So, not like not your typical guy.
Yeah, he's not living in Idaho in a shack.
No, absolutely not. Apparently, RDS, I'm trying to bring up the link here, which is, of course, not doing too well for me. Shoot.
Hold on. Well, there's Radio Data System. There's
No. It's the name of an author. This guy was a member of Steel, I think, Balls of Steel or steelballs.com, which is a how to date women type site. And these were videos he made for... his group. Oh. So there's the fucking link isn't coming up now. And RDS is the author of one of these books, which you actually see on his table, and he's talking. The guy was trying to, I wish this link would come up. God damn it.
Maybe you should get it. There's a clip. George Sodini, RDS. The book is How to Date Women for Men Over 35.
There
the book
go.
Is written by R. Don Steele, a.k.a. Steel Balls.
Steel Balls.
A.k.a. RDS.
Right.
So RDS, this sounds like a. It sounds like this guy's taking it as a cult with rules that he had to abide by. And then I guess he. Well, that's interesting because that would. How to date women for men over 35 has got to be. That sounds like it. Geez, I don't know. How do you date women for men over 35? You just say, hey, you want to go out to dinner? I mean, what does it take?
So then you look at his blog. I just take a look at the so-called blog, John. And this is a senior computer programmer. And I'm going to give you, so you can just click on the link in your Skype, georgesodini.com. And it's like, this is not a blog.
Wow.
Now,
HTML1.
Now click on
1.0.
Now check it out. Click on the life or death link on that page.
We'll have a link to this on the show notes,
yeah,
I assume.
Of course. Now, you see.
Although anybody who's listening to the stream can just go to georgesodini.com and there it is.
And play along. So click on the life or death link.
Okay.
Now,
yeah,
go into the date of death. I mean, this is so. I mean, I don't know anyone who would be this nutty. And type in 20090804, which was the day he killed himself, or maybe he was assisted, and then click submit, and then you get this page, which has...
I got a page not found.
Then you didn't do it right. Did you do it in the date of
death? Oh, no, I didn't. You're right. 20090804,
which is his date of death.
This guy's a coder, and he doesn't accept anything. It goes dead. It doesn't even have an error message.
It's like the Microsoft Windows error page.
George Sodini, age 48, date of birth 1960, date of death 8/4/2009. He gave him his own death date. 5'10", 155 pounds, never married. He's 48.
So this is a basic HTML 1.0 page. This is weird, man. This is not anything any normal computer, even an abnormal computer programmer wouldn't make this.
Right. Now, what we're looking at on this page, and people should definitely do this.
How fucked is this? And this, by the way, is what the mainstream media calls a blog and an online journal, which is hidden behind his date of death.
And so apparently he has an outline of all his concerns and right to the – with a bunch of bullshit entries that are just bogus. And now he goes idiots. He apparently Andy Pulkowski has been the target of his disaffection. I've been in bar rooms and church groups. The worst people by far are the religious types, especially a right-wing, stiff-faced fundy like Andy. Condescending, demanding, passive-aggressive person, frigid, rigid, linear, and totally inflexible. Being a very serious... This guy's got issues. Not Andy.
Whoever wrote this makes it look like this guy's got issues. Now, I kind of...
But so, if you think the whole thing was a setup...
Yes, I mean, do, and I'll tell you why. I believe that because K&L Gates is huge. You know, you don't just get in to be a senior programmer at K&L Gates. And from what I understand, he was...
Okay, I'm going to try to out-guess you here. Hold on. You're going to give us a kind of a Pelican brief, one of these kind of interesting things where something he knew something,
yes,
found out something, and so he was either hypnotized, programmed, or something to get rid of him. He had to die.
Yes.
And so this all was developed around that premise.
Why, in fact, John? I believe that he had knowledge of the Goldman Sachs trading program. That's what I think. I think he had knowledge, and I think he was actually...
Why would he have knowledge? This guy can't even do it. Okay.
Now, according to... Looking at this, would you hire a programmer who set up a site like this? Come on.
No, the guy doesn't know what he's doing.
Okay. He was a senior programmer.
Which we'd have to assume he didn't do this because he probably would do something that was reasonably...
Cool. You know. He would have done something cool, right?
Well, either that or at least it would have been programmer-like. You know,
yeah,
there's lots
exactly.
of text.
And by the way, if you view source, there's a couple of things that are commented out, which is also kind of interesting to look at. So yeah, no, he was educated at Carnegie Mellon. I mean, this was a really, really smart guy. But it's not like a guy you just. It doesn't make sense that he went postal all of a sudden.
Right, and he's got the thing at the end. He's got miscellaneous. He's got four statements, including number four, death lives. And then at the very bottom, he's got copy this to Usenet news groups, where my voice will speak forever, with two asterisks. Well, no, I guess the whole thing is asterisk, which is something nerds do sometimes. Don't modify it. If you correct my spelling errors, I used WordPad. Unless the names are legal or required legally to be blotted out, then fine. Thanks.
WordPad. So I would like to understand more, because through this occurrence, I started to learn more about K&L Gates. And this is a very, very powerful, powerful company. They had a couple of layoffs, two rounds of layoffs in the past 6 or 9 months. This guy stayed on, so you know he wasn't some schmuck. He was clearly doing something. These guys are not to be underestimated. So, you know, and I see nowhere in the news. Of course, you know, there was so much about Twitter. When this happened almost at the same time, that you know, it kind of went, it snowed
coincidence.
Under. It,
you know, yeah. No, nothing to see here.
Yeah. Oh, shit.
Don't look over here.
Nothing to see here.
Ooh, look at that.
Pretty fast. I got that. I got there on the draw. That's exactly what this story is. So I'm, and why can someone just go, you know how when you have one of these so-called psychos who goes in and shoots up innocent women, they usually go interview people, like people at his job. No, I have not seen any interview with anyone from the law firm. The law firm, you know, no statements anywhere. I can't find anything. I'm highly interested in what he did, what kind of job, what were his responsibilities. There's a lot more to find out about this. There really is. And it's just been pushed away.
Yeah, well, everyone assumes that all the information you need is in this idiotic blog where he bitches and moans about the fact that he's not getting laid.
And this, essentially. And this is where Google becomes completely useless.
Hey, buddy,
useless.
There are things out there called hookers. Jeez. Doesn't the RDS guy, explain that possibility? I mean, seriously.
Maybe he went to them and they said,
no service for you!
You work for K&L Gates?
No service for you!
It's called hookers. This is another piece of fine advice from John C. Dvorak, ladies and gentlemen. If you can't get laid, don't go to steelballs.com. There's always something called hookers. Thank
well,
you, John.
Tell me I'm wrong.
So I'm going to I've been doing a deeper dive into K&L Gates. It was they merged, I guess, recently. They bought another law firm. But it's interesting because they are Bill Gates's de facto law firm, because I guess he owned a law firm and his dad owned a law firm. It's like there's a
I
lot
don't know
of
if Bill ever owned a law firm. He's not a lawyer.
Well, his dad is a partner in this.
Yeah, no, that's the Gates.
Right, but all I think a lot of the Bill Gates business, particularly the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation business, runs through this law firm.
Oh, I would hope.
And I bet you there's some Goldman Sachs connections.
Well, that's a long shot because you have no evidence of this.
Well, I don't yet.
All right. Well, if you get it, report back. But yeah, you're right. This whole story is fishy. And it's underreported and nobody seems to care. And it's a mass murder. I mean, you'd think they'd get more coverage. Oh, well, only coverage it's going to get is for gun control.
They haven't even done that yet.
No, that's coming. They'll find out that he borrowed the gun or something, so they're going to try to make it illegal to loan guns out to people.
So one of the K&L Gates, I guess it was a partner or junior partner, Will Stell, is on the oversight board of the United States Sea Laws, which of course fits nicely into the United Nations taking over all sea, all things sea, above and below. I don't know, man. They're part of the program somehow.
Well, we'll put it on our list of things that we track.
Yes, K&L Gates, definitely something to track. Hey, let's do some of your clips.
Let me take a look at what
Wait a minute. What is this shortwave thing?
Oh, I picked this up on the shortwave. Play it.
This is your Health and Human Services Small Step Tip of the Week. Tip number 52, avoid labor-saving devices.
This is your tip from the Health and Human Services Small Step Program.
So I've learned to use some of the crazy filters in Audacity.
Mickey actually said, "Hey, you know that don't eat portions bigger than the size of your fist is actually not a bad one." I'm like, "Okay,
I'll do that one next."
I'm like, "Honey, go get the paper, please."
It's not a bad one.
Oh man,
yeah, that's one of the rules. Whatever the number was, 51 or whatever. It's
52.
52, don't use labor-saving devices. What?
From smallsteps.gov. Another $19 million website. Have you seen grants.gov?
Is that another $19 million website?
No, ooh, but I thought
somebody's going to correct us. $18 million.
I'm sorry, yes. Grants.gov is a fantastic site. And, you know, if you want to help us, really help us, go to this site. Which
and help us get a grant. And
help us get a grant, exactly. I mean, here's the subtitle of grants.gov, Find, Apply, Succeed. And I'm looking through it, I'm like, I can't find anything. But this did bring me to, speaking of the $18 million website, to recovery.gov. You just need to go there for a second, John. If you, because, of course, one of the main features of the 2.0 redesign is their mapping feature. Which is, you know, they're making a really big deal about, if it's somewhere in the middle of the page there.
It's right in the middle of the page.
Yeah. Click here
for
maps.
State maps track spending.
Right. Now go to the maps. So you get a page with four maps and one of them says investments by state, investments by recipient, state recovery sites, and then estimated job effect. I'd like you to click on that for a moment.
Well, wait,
John.
Wait. I can't find it. I mean, that, oh, here it is down below.
Yeah. Estimated job effect. So, okay. Impact. Click. Recovery.gov provides, so this is your $18 million of work, provides estimates of jobs to be created and saved in each state under the stimulus program. So
it's
then you, now if
Ajax
you mouse over,
here.
Yeah, but if you mouse over, every single state says jobs created / saved in the next 2 years. So this is not even saying
this
or.
Is about as much BS as you can possibly imagine.
Right. Now scroll down to the bottom and click on the link for read description of estimation methods. This'll kill you.
Of course, it's going to kill my machine because it's a PDF. I guess you need $18 million to drop a PDF file on there.
So how did they estimate these jobs saved/created, which, I mean, it's not even a frickin' number. It doesn't make any sense. You know, can you give me the created number and the saved number?
No. The state jobs estimates are inherently more speculative than the overall estimates. I need to have my shortwave radio stuff on here.
Well, no,
at
but
the time they were constructed, detailed estimates of state-by-state spending were not available. The CEA therefore allocated jobs by state in three plausible ways.
Well, then you missed the most important part at the top. The national effect of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009 on employment was estimated using the methods described in Romer and Bernstein. And then you go down and it says the job impact of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Plan, Romer, Christina, and Jared Bernstein. Now, if you Google that...
There's actually there's a link there.
Oh, really? I didn't even see that. There's a link? Oh,
yeah, I just clicked on it, and I'm off to the races.
It's another PDF.
Check it out.
This is done in January. This was an estimate. This is the stuff that when the president was still president. This is like campaign literature.
Oh, this is the one with Jared Bernstein. He's from the office of the vice president-elect.
Yes.
A non-existent entity, by the way. There is no such thing as the office of the vice president-elect.
So this is just an estimate they made before any real calculations were done, and now they're putting it on this website as if this is the fact, as if this is what's been created / saved through this fabulous stimulus. It's just old bullshit data.
It's totally made up.
It is. Thank you. That's kind of my point. It's
that's
made up.
Yeah, your word you're looking for.
Made up.
It's made up.
And they're making a big deal about it.
Unbelievable.
I could go on for hours.
It's just annoying. You're just making me, you're irking me.
Good.
I don't need to be any more irked than I am.
Good. So anyway, go to grants.gov and find us a grant, will you? Because everyone seems to be getting one. In San Francisco, the Del Monte Corporation has two grants totaling about $9 million. I'm not quite sure what their grant is for.
Pickles.
Pineapple.
Could be. But I use I like the Del Monte pickle. The kosher dill is a good product.
Not familiar. Hey, and while I've got you on the line here, Johnny boy. So,
Johnny boy,
here's something I don't get. So the unemployment figures come out, and instead of 400,000 jobs, we only lost 200,050 jobs. How can the overall unemployment number go from 9.5% down to 9.4% if we still lost jobs?
Yeah, because a bunch of people fell off the rolls. They've been unemployed too long.
So, if you're unemployed too long, then you're no longer unemployed?
By that number, yeah. Yeah, you're now a bum.
So we should have a bum index. How many people are now bums?
You're basically
but
a
the
bum.
Wall Street Journal, well, of course, that's a Murdoch publication now. It's like, you know, the president comes out and says, this is great. You know, we're turning the corner. You know, everyone has a graph going down. I'm like, that makes no sense. You still lost 250,000 jobs, yet there's less joblessness. I don't understand. Doesn't anyone see this?
No. No, nobody wants to see it. But the big numbers are in the past because that's when they're having the big whoppers. You know, month after month were huge.
Yeah.
The first ones, you know, 600,000 and up. So as those guys drop off the rolls because they can't get
What rolls are you talking about when they drop off?
The unemployment, the way it's registered. You can only collect unemployment for so long. And once you stop collecting unemployment, you're no longer unemployed. You're a bum. So
is this a great country or what?
So as those huge numbers that came in early fall off the map, we can still be losing jobs, but the unemployment rate will go down.
It's kind of like the EBITDA of unemployment.
Exactly, a phony number. EBITDA. You hear it all the time with companies that are in floundering.
Yeah.
They're using the EBITDA all the time as their justification for how well
they're doing. We're doing great. We've got EBITDA. We're EBITDA profitable, which is estimated before income tax earnings bullshit.
Before everything.
Before everything else. In other words, you're losing your shirt. Oh, man. So a horrible thing happened over the Hudson the other day. Helicopter and
my wife was hoping you'd talk about it because she was saying, "Why are they having these people, you know, in the helicopters that are doing sightseeing on the same airspace as little planes?"
Well, they share the same airspace. Helicopters
are
at the
exact same altitude.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, you know, this is reasonably safe. There's two things about this. First of all, shit unfortunately just happens. You've got bad pilots like you've got bad drivers. And in this case, luckily it happened over the Hudson. So it was contained to the nine people, four on board of the Piper and five on board of the helicopter. What I think happened, you know, if you're flying through that corridor, I think the flight level is about 1,100 feet. Probably the helicopter just popped up. You know, he was just ascending the plane. Basically just flew right into him. But the thing that was interesting, the New York Times reported on this, and the story changed. I have a cached version, which I'll put in the show notes, because one sentence is gone from the version that the New York Times has up now. And I'll read the paragraph in the cached version. In dramatic scenes glimpsed by hundreds of joggers, bikers, strollers, and apartment dwellers on both sides of the mile-wide river, the two aircraft appeared to break apart. By the way, if you're jogging, you really, you know, you're not hearing it until the crash has happened, which is probably the sound doesn't hit you until 2 seconds later. So it's just like a car crash. Everyone saw it, but they didn't really. A wing from the plane and rotary blades from the chopper and fell spinning into the Hudson opposite West 14th Street in Manhattan. Some described the collision as sounding like a quick roll of thunder followed by an eerie silence. Now, here's the line that is no longer in the online version of the Times. Immediately after the crash, the power went out in five counties, but was quickly restored.
What? No.
What? So
I know where this is headed.
Yeah, EMP. I don't know what that's about. I don't know why it was in the original story and has been taken out. Which counties? I can't even find any other references to this in Google News.
This EMP has me kind of intrigued. And so I want you to play...
EMP, for new listeners, is electromagnetic pulse. It's a weapon which is probably much more effective than a nuclear bomb. And then in fact, you can trigger an EMP event by exploding a nuclear bomb at high altitude.
So I was listening to a discussion by one of the admirals that runs the ballistic missile defense program for the Navy and the Aegis program in particular. So I'm sitting, by the way, for people out there who know what
What's Aegis?
Do I do with my, Aegis is an anti-ballistic missile system. And I want you to play a clip, To Name a Few, followed by Why Say It. But first play To Name a Few. I want... This is the admiral. Go.
Internationally, talked about Japan as the gold standard. We have lots of relationships with countries on exchanging data and analysis of what it takes to do ballistic missile defense. And we're very proud of our relationships we've had. And I'll talk about who's participated. Also, I would highlight here who has purchased the Aegis system. Australia, South Korea, Japan, Norway, to name a few.
So I'm thinking Norway. So anyway, this system works, by the way, and this is the system that they rejiggered to shoot that satellite out of the air. Remember that?
You mean the one that collided?
Well, they shot one out of the air.
Oh, No, of course they blew it out of the sky. They had to.
So
what am I playing next
year? System at 22,000 miles an hour. But anyway, so I'm listening to this. It's moderately interesting. My daughter comes down and she says, "You're nuts," and leaves. And then then I hear this and I said, I got to play this for Adam because I know he's going to be interested in this because it's actually he explains how the system works and how it can be deployed. But somebody asks a kind of an offbeat question and the guy makes a point of not answering the question in such a way he could have, because he ends up answering the question, but he makes this statement at the end that I thought was weird. But so play Why Say It.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Yes. How effective, Admiral, do you think that the Aegis system might be at intercepting a missile launch from, say, a barge or a trawler a few hundred miles off the coast of either the Atlantic or Pacific or in the Gulf of Mexico, aimed at putting an EMP warhead 300 miles over the continental United States for an EMP strike?
Well, I won't speak to EMP because that exceeds the classification for the discussion.
So the question was, how possible is it that the Aegis system could
take out
an EMP weapon?
Yeah. He answers the question. I didn't want to record the whole thing. He actually answers that question, but he makes a point of saying he can't talk about EMPs, but it's not really a question about EMPs. But he makes the point that he can't talk, like, as if somebody's going to check on this. But he says, yeah, you can take it out just like anything else if you're positioned right, which is buying these multi-billion-dollar systems that sit on these extremely elaborate ships. And by the way, there's the let's see, what was the name? The Erie? It's the Lake Erie, or there's one ship that he kept talking about. I guess he's one of the, he may be the commander of it. But these ships are just designed to haul these anti-ballistic missile systems out to the ocean. And he says they've got one floating around Japan that is covers the whole country. There's nothing can hit Japan if they wanted to.
Except for a typhoon.
Okay. Now, the thing that's kind of interesting is that these are Raytheon missiles.
Well, here's my question. This guy is currently in service. Why? Yeah. What is he doing talking about being so proud about we sold them to all these other countries? Isn't he just supposed to be doing his job defending our country? Why is he in sales for some reason? Am I missing something
here? That's what it seems like. And why is Norway buying this? What are they worried about? But I think the EMP question is the one that, as soon as that came up, I said, this might be what this whole thing's all about. It's not about, you know, somebody. I mean, because let's face it, if somebody, like, let's say Iran decided to send a nuke at Paris to blow up Paris, Iran would be flat after that. I mean, besides the Russians, the United States and all that, we have a lot of missiles, you know, ready to be fired still. I mean, we haven't taken them offline, and we would just flatten the country. There would be nothing left of Iran. So they wouldn't do this. It makes no sense. But do an EMP attack is kind of an interesting philosophical thing.
So I wonder if, because an EMP attack is relatively simple. You know, if a nuclear bomb detonates, it actually does kill a lot of electrical devices in the vicinity. So if you have an EMP going up, you can blow it up all you want. I think the EMP strike will still take place because if the thing explodes, then you get your EMP.
Well, the way this thing operates, it will hit the missile before it gets to the apogee, and it blows it up in flight, and the bomb won't go off.
What the fuck has this world come to, John? What are we talking about, man? This is nuts. We deserve to die, all of us.
You know, the problem is that, you know, as soon as Raytheon's name comes up, the first thing I think of is those phony baloney patriots that were in that, you know, first Gulf War that were supposedly blowing up the Scuds when they weren't blowing them up at all. They not one of them hit. They finally admitted that in front of Congress some years and years later. But, of course, they showed on the news, they showed the Scud going up, and then they'd show the thing blowing up. And in fact, the Scud was just breaking up on its own.
It's falling apart mid-flight.
That's right. And, you know, so the Scud would go up and fall apart, and they'd say, oh, Patriot took it out.
Ah, John, look out, look out, look out. We have an EMP attack. It's coming, it's coming, it's coming.
So I think we should need to look into hardening our systems against EMPs. In other words, what do we do with our computer systems and our backup power supplies and our generators and all the rest of it? So if there was ever an EMP blown up in the area, what would we do to stay online?
From what I understand, there's pretty much
I need to surf the web, man.
You know, we have talked about this, that part of the smart grid might actually be for this.
Yeah, I'm thinking it is.
But there's pretty much nothing you can do. You know, if you want to protect equipment from an EMP, it has to be pretty much contained in a steel case. You know, so your chips will get fried.
Do a Faraday cage work? Does somebody out there know anything about EMPs? If I put for example, let's say you have a house and you
like, let's say you have a minimum security containment cell.
Well, I bet your place would probably be totally
immune.
I'll
be fine.
But it. Could you put a Faraday cage, a thin one, in the drywall, or make drywall with Faraday cage cable? You know, just a you don't need much, just like a net of wires.
I think you need like lead or something like that. I don't think it's Faraday cage.
I think a Faraday cage will do it. But the problem is there's windows and things.
I don't think so. I'm pretty sure you need a lot more.
Well, I'm asking. I want somebody to tell us.
Still following the... What do I hear in the background, John?
That's a dog that's once in, and I can't do anything about it now.
Aw, let him in, John. Come on, let him in.
He's going to be a pest if he comes in here, and it's going to ruin the show.
Well, he's already ruining the show, because it sounds like like you've got him tied to a tree or something.
You will obey.
Of course, the Blackwater news is falling off the radar, where there are, I guess, three whistleblowers who are testifying that...
That's what you wanted.
What is that, man? That's wrong. What have you done to this dog?
It's a basset hound, and he likes to talk.
He's not talking. He's crying. He's like, feed me, feed me. I need some food, please. Finally, give me some food.
No service for you.
Well, he needs to go outside again. I've actually recorded this dog. I've got a bunch of clips of him.
Hey, John.
He gets pretty funny.
John, it's not funny. It sounds wrong.
You don't own a dog.
I've had plenty of dogs. None like this. No, you took care of him there.
All right, cover for me for 1 minute.
Okay. What shall we do? Can you still hear me while you're doing whatever you're doing?
I'm taking the dog out.
I'm not going to cover for you, man. I'm just going to cut this out of the show. Oh, my God.
Let's listen in to what's happening in the animal kingdom known as the Dvorak compound.
If anyone's ever owned a basset hound, they know they're very demanding.
That was awesome, dude. So, just 2 days before the Blackwater employees filed all these sworn statements that the company's owner, Eric Prince, views himself as the Christian crusader tasked with eliminating Muslims and the Islamic faith from the globe and is implicated in murdering people who wanted to blow the whistle on him. The Obama administration extended a contract with Blackwater for more than $20 million of security services.
Don't look over here.
Nothing to see here.
Ooh, look at that.
These guys, I thought these guys were fired. They were fired.
There's something, you know what? I don't believe any of these stories now. There's something fake. There's something misinformation, disinformation, screwball about all the stuff about this guy and that company.
Well, Representative Jan Schakowsky of Illinois is angry about it, about this contract.
Good.
July 24th, the Army signed an $8.9 million contract with the aviation wing of XZ, known as Presidential Airways. This is the private airlines that that allegedly were smuggling illegal weapons into Iraq, hidden in dog food. And this is for aviation services to Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan. This is... Oh, here it is. The aviation contract is described as, quote, air charter for things and and non-scheduled chartered passenger air transportation. I like air charter for things. I shall try that out on my next filing with the flight for my, you know, my flight plan. I'm air charter for things. You watch how quickly I'm not getting off the ground if you file a report that says that.
Yeah, minimally.
Unbelievable. Read the whole story in the show notes at noagenda.mevio.com.
Why don't you play the clip I have coming to an end?
Coming to an end. Here we go.
But we knew instantly in our hearts that the nightmare of our lives was finally coming to an end.
That was a John C. Dvorak edit, by the way. You know, Wall Street Journal, hold on. This is from, let me see, I picked this up. One of my neighbors moved out, but his subscription still comes through. This is really
free
cool.
Newspapers, free, another benefit.
Free newspapers. So this whole story, and let me see if here it is. World News. And here's from left. Al Gore and Joel Hyatt, co-founders of Current TV, and Bill Clinton celebrate the return of two journalists from North Korea on Wednesday. And I love this description. Let me see if I can find this. Okay. Hugs. So this is a sidebar. Hugs pats as rivals reconcile. So, of course, there's always some tension between Al and Bill. Mr. Gore, whose Current TV employs the reporters, applauded as Mr. Clinton climbed down the steps at Bob Hope Airport in Burbank, California. At first, they seemed destined for a routine handshake. But Mr. Clinton pulled Mr. Gore into a bear hug. Mr. Gore hesitated just a moment, his left hand suspended above Mr. Clinton's shoulder blade before it descended into a two-pat man hug. Mr. Clinton matched him, raised him a third pat, added two right-handed strokes and three more pats before they disentangled.
Yeah.
5 seconds after their chests met, Mr. Clinton turned to join the journalist emotionally.
This is in the journal?
This is the Wall Street Journal. You know, I need some, like, let me see. Do I have, I wish I had
some. Hit the real news clip.
And now, back to real news.
Mr. Gore, whose Current TV employs the reporters, applauded as Mr. Clinton climbed down the steps at Bob Hope Airport in Burbank, California. At first, they seemed destined for a routine handshake. But Mr. Clinton pulled Mr. Gore into a bear hug. Mr. Gore hesitated just a moment, his left hand suspended above Mr. Clinton's shoulder blade, before it descended into a two-pat Mr. Clinton matched him, raised him a third bat, added two right-handed strokes, and three more pats before they disentangled. Sorry.
I think you nailed it.
Yeah, it's kind of horny. I got turned on by myself there for a second. So the journalists reunite with families in the U.S., this whole story about, you know, how wonderful, blah, blah, blah. No written, of course, this is now a Murdoch publication. Nothing at all about the fact that these two journalists were on assignment and crossed the border illegally to go get a story. But the final paragraph, the final paragraph of this whole page, the detention and release of the women have brought much attention to Current TV, which has struggled to broaden its audience since it was launched 4 years ago. The company had been preparing for a $100 million initial public offering, but recently canceled these plans. So,
because nobody would have subscribed. The thing's a turkey.
Yeah, I'm telling you, this was a PR move for Current, and a great PR move for Kim Jong-il.
Yeah,
because he's just sitting there like, yeah, of course. You're like, dude. Of course,
so I had a shit-eating grin on his face the whole time.
Well, of course, because they've shut down all media in North Korea, he thought that he was actually getting the current president of the United States. He didn't realize that Bill Clinton is no longer president.
Well, he doesn't really care. The thing is that, by the way, the girls were never in prison. They were in a hotel.
In a hotel, yeah, hotel, you know? Exactly.
Room service.
People have been giving me flack for that.
Why?
Man, you shouldn't be laughing at that shit, man. That's not right. That's not right, man. You know, so people, they were hostages, that, man.
The one who was whining in the coming to an end clip. Yeah. Let's play it again, by the way. I just like the way her voice has tremolo.
Oops, sorry. I blew that. My mistake. Here we go.
But we knew instantly in our hearts that the nightmare of our lives was finally coming to an end.
Jobs, 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 and jobs. Let's vote for jobs.
So the worst thing about their imprisonment in North Korea, John, you know what it was?
What?
No service for you!
There was no room service.
Oh, there wasn't? So anyway, she sounds like Edith Piaf.
You know, she does sound like Edith Piaf.
Yeah.
Which is the correct pronunciation.
So anyway, so they had her on Current TV. So I flipped on Current TV and watched it so that the publicity stunt worked for me. And it's a dreadful, dreadful stuff. So they decided to show some of her old stuff in a special. You know, she's like this, you know.
She'll be on the CBS.
Oh, she'll get a
CBS
Pulitzer.
60 Minutes. Oh, Pulitzer.
She'll get a Pulitzer. Now, anyway, so they show her old stuff. She was shown sneaking into, you know, parts of Turkey she's not supposed to go to and in the Kurd
investigative
area.
Investigative journalism. Why don't you go sneak into the White House, okay? Sneak into Rahm Emanuel's office. Then I'll applaud you.
So she's sneaking around. And so, oh, no, it was an accident that we got caught. Yeah, it was an accident. Got caught. I mean, what do you think you're doing? It just doesn't make any sense. And what are you going to find out that we don't know?
Well?
Yeah, I don't know. It's just annoying. I find her annoying, and I find people that can't see through this to be annoying, too. Anyway, so that's the kind of thing we do. By the way, I do have one pet peeve. I think I'm going to do one a week.
Okay.
It's just a minor pet peeve. It just bugs me. Play the Friends clip.
Is this from the TV series Friends?
Yeah, it's okay. A clip from the show.
Is that show still in production now?
No, it's just it's on Ultimate reruns.
All right, here we go.
Get me a muffin?
Oh, sure. What kind?
Let me think. What do I want? What do I want?
Please take your time. It's an important decision, not like, say, I don't know, deciding to marry someone. This is about a muffin.
Blueberry.
Blueberry it is.
Thank you.
Okay. What is the deal with canned laughter? It stinks. It ruins the show. If people would watch 30 Rock, which is a good comedy, has no canned laughter, no phony audience, nothing.
No one watches it.
Well, it's a huge hit. Are you kidding?
No, it's not. It is not a huge hit. It has received many accolades and awards. exactly the opposite is true, and Tina Fey jokes about this all the time. Their numbers are actually quite low.
Well, people should watch the show.
No, then. They need to put some canned laughter in so that they get some real numbers.
This is not the point of my argument, to have you take the other side of canned laughter.
But I come from this world. People are so conditioned, when you hear the laughter, it actually triggers laughter in yourself.
This horrible canned laughter that they put in after he just says the word blueberry muffin and a bunch of people twitter, or, you know, titter, I'm sorry, twitter. They titter, oh, that's so funny, which is some guy turning a knob up and down, or, you know, there's different kinds of knobs. They got the thing down to a fine art now. You got, you know, almost individual laughs and stuff you can control. But it's like, I find it, I think it's distracting, it's annoying, and I think it's insulting.
You need to look at America's Funniest Home Videos. That's where they really do the canned laughter. And it is insulting, but it's insulting to you, and only you, because this is.
Oh, you're not insulted by this?
No, I'm not insulted. I don't give a shit. I don't watch that crap. It's because it's below my intelligence level, John.
But this has been going on since the 50s. Reality TV shows.
Now, reality TV shows, depends on what kind. If it's the unscripted drama, there is no audience, so there's no canned laughter.
They need a laugh track. Let's take one of those shows and put a laugh track behind it and see if it improves it.
Of course, again, when you're not watching it, it becomes that much more apparent how canned it is. Let's listen again.
Get me a muffin?
Oh, sure. What kind?
Let me think. What do I want? What?
Yeah, turn it up right there.
Do I want?
Please. You can actually
hear. That's hilarious. Hilarious.
Sometimes they, they record these laughters. Usually they record it right before the show is taped. And they have everyone applaud and laugh, and they have comedians come out and tell jokes. So they actually record the audience really laughing. But they'll use, sometimes you'll hear, like, there'll be one woman go, and you'll hear that over and over and over again in the canned laughter.
Please take your time. It's an important decision. Not like, say, I don't know, deciding to marry someone. This is about a muffin.
Blueberry.
Blueberry it is.
Thank you.
But this has been going on since the 50s, John. There's nothing new.
I just said it's a pet peeve. I wanted to bring it up. I was just flipping around. I turned off current TV, and of course I was highly annoyed by that. And so then I turned this on, and I saw this. This is I can't take it. So I had to record this and complain. It's just a moment of complaint.
Yeah, that's cool. Keith Ray, one of our producers, sent us a fabulous offer, which I will put in our show notes, because any one of our producers may want to jump on this. It's a great deal. American Airlines flight to Moscow, $199 one way.
One way. I like that part.
I love that. One way.
This is probably a good time of the year to go to Moscow. Is it Moscow or Moscow?
Mokba.
Yeah, well, that's probably what it really is. So I think it's about time we discuss some of the benefits of contributing to this show.
Yes, let me bring up. Can I do a couple of the women here? Let me rephrase that. Can I read some of the emails from our female donators?
Sure.
Okay, Tanya Wyman donated $161.80. Of course, thank you very much. Here's what she says. Thanks so much for bringing us the real news twice a week, every week. Just made my second donation. A bit late for Sunday's show, but I was delayed prepping a batch of crockpot chili. Yep. August in New York City, but it's actually a bit chilly here for August anyway. Go figure. Anyway, this time it's in the amount of $161.80, which does mean something. I'll give you a couple of hints. It's related to fractals, and the decimal point is two places off. John? Can you figure it out? 161.80, and it's related to
fractal. 161. So it'd be 101. So it's two places off, which means it's either 1.618 or
16180.16180,
which is what it has to be. It has to go that way, because otherwise it makes no sense. You could have given us, you know, $16. So it would be 16180. So I would assume it's a date. Like 16th of January, but that would be a European style of dating, so it wouldn't be that. It would be 16180. I don't know. What do you got?
I don't have anything.
No. Well, maybe somebody in the chat room can figure this. I'm going to actually go look at the chats as they come in.
And she does say she hopes to become another female knight at some point, at least on the layaway program. And she says, if you guys do the No Agenda dinner in New York City, I'm definitely there. Cool.
Okay, I'll put the mailing list thing up this week for the dinner, so people can go to noagenda.squarespace.com and put the name on the mailing list, or they can go to dvorak.org/NA.
And this one I liked a lot, this email from Eleanor Schultes. Aloha, John and Adam. I am a listener-producer who is coming to you from a grass hut in Gitmo Nation Mid-Pacific on Oahu, Hawaii. My boyfriend turned me on to your show a few months back, and I've been hooked ever since. We have a blast listening to the jingles amidst the theories, conspiracies, and truths surrounding all things Gitmo. Look, let me be clear on why I'm tossing in my donation for the Armory, Winery, Library, and Linguisa Sausagery, which, by the way, is the unofficial state sausage. We call it Portuguese sausage. My boyfriend, John Foley, is celebrating his birthday on August 12th. It's a bit hard to buy a gift for him, so I figured I'd give a gift in his name to something we both enjoy. My donation of $69.40 represents his birth year and his age, born in 1969, turning 40. I hope this is enough of a donation to allow a quick happy birthday during your donation shout-outs. Thank you both for your insight, commentary, and wit, and keeping up the great work. In the meantime, we will be searching for the long-lost Obama birth certificate and hunkering down in our bunkers to avoid two to the islands from Kim Jong-il while voting for jobs. Yay!
Jobs, 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 and jobs. Let's vote for jobs!
Yay! By the way...
So together we should just say happy birthday, John Foley. What, okay. Want to do it?
Yeah, 1, 2, 3. Happy birthday, John Foley.
John Foley.
It doesn't work with Skype, does it?
No, not at all. But it's pretty funny, I'm sure. So somebody says that 1.6 180 is phi, which is some constant. I never heard of phi.
Phi?
Phi. It's phi, P-H-I, yeah. The guy says, not pi, phi. I don't know what phi is. It would be nice if he explained it. But anyway, some constant. Well, here's some other people that gave us some funding. Our new producers. Adam Probola, $50. He's in Bensonville, Illinois. By the way, Eleanor Schultes is in Wainia, which is like a really nice little town. Adam Probola, Bensonville, Illinois. Joe Weinady, Weinady, in Bowling Green, Ohio. Again, we have Americans.
That's
Travis,
good.
Travis, and he's 50, and Travis Wynn, everybody's 50 except one. Travis Wynn is in Hemet, California, 50. Tristan Lennon, which is this is a second donation of 50 from Wagga Wagga, New North, something Southwest Territory, something in Australia.
Thank
but
you very
Wagga
much,
Wagga
Tristan.
Is the name of the town.
Yeah, thanks, Tristan. Appreciate the second donation, man. That's cool.
Jeff Barron in Woodstock, Georgia. He actually has power there. And then we have...
why are you insulting people like that?
I'm not insulting him.
They're keeping us on the air and you're insulting them.
No, it's just Woodstock. Seems like an out there place. I live in Woodstock, Georgia.
We got power.
A Roman... I think it's Libimov. It's Lyubimov. Who's in Vaud, Switzerland, which I believe is one of those places that it's like Gestadt, I think, one of these places where there's a lot of famous rich people staying.
How do you spell it?
V-A-U-D.
Vaud. Probably a lot of, I'm not even going to say it. Yeah, rich people.
Right? Well, I would say that there's something going on because he gave us two donations, one, 50, but just to make his point, he gave us a number, $19.17. Which I think is when the IRS was invented, right? 1917, I think.
I don't know. I wasn't around then.
I was just a kid. thanks. That's a good thanks for the donation, Roman. Johnny Santos, 50. Peter Smilikoff. Smilikoff. Did I have him? I think I had him before. Galloway, Ohio, 5744. Matthew Bellamar. By the way, anyone who contributes like during these hours sometimes will get mentioned twice.
Yeah, it does.
Matthew Bellamar, Wolcott, Connecticut, $50. John Tarita in Pasadena, 50. And that's about it. Now,
I want more from Matthew Wilson, who sent us an interesting number, $78.65, and he actually explains what it is. Can you guess? $78.65?
78, no.
Okay. 78 is the ASCII decimal number for N, and 65 is ASCII decimal number for A.
Oh, cute.
Yeah, I like
cute.
That. Yeah, thank you very much, Matt.
Yeah, we never guess that stuff. oh, New no. South Wales, by the way, is what NSW stands for. Anyway,
Australia.
Smilikov's 5744 is not explained. Do we have any idea what that is? 5744?
5744.
Oh, no, never mind. This was an old one. That's right. That's our two ages, supposedly. He's getting way too much credit for this.
And correct you are. 5744, right on the money. You wish. You wish. If you really want to send that amount, it is 6544.
65 bull.
64, then.
No. All you have to do is look it up in the New York Times.
Exactly. John, I have an important message for you. Okay.
Because it will not put seniors in a position of being put to death by their government.
That's just for you.
I need that clip so I can... Oh, I have that clip.
Yeah,
I'm
going to
put the
you.
Yay at the end. I'm going to put the yay at the end of that one.
Hey, I just wanted to mention... Forget
Wait, before you mention anything...
We have more.
Both Michael Atkinson and Corian from Holland. Michael Atkinson in particular...
Corine.
Corine. He's in Namibia, and he knows how to do crop circles. He says that particular one that we're talking about is easy to do, and he has all the geometrics. He says it's done with ropes, and he says you do the stakeouts, and he says it's much easier to do these things at night because you can use because flashlights can be used as methodologies for creating a straight line that you can't do during the day. And he says they're brain dead easy. He said 3-4 hours you get one of those done. Corine in Holland mentioned that the Firefox logo was done, and she said, turned me on to 3 or 4 people who did it, and she said that they can easily copy this stuff.
John,
and so
John,
the question is, are you going to put up $350,000 for this challenge?
John, invest in a plane ticket. You've got 15 hours. You can do it in broad daylight. You can do it with your flashlights. I want a replica of what is taking place in Wiltshire.
Yeah.
Go ahead and you can go divvy
up
the gold bar.
Go ahead and try
bar.
To wrest the gold bar from your cold, dead hands.
New guidelines and rules for the media in Ireland as we have the do-over of the Lisbon Treaty referendum vote coming up. They are now in effect as of last Friday. Two changes have been made to the guidelines. They were implemented following consideration of the guidelines that the BCI board, the Broadcasting Commission of Ireland, put into place. They're intended to clarify the means by which broadcasters allocate airtime during the period when the guidelines are in operation. So this is how they're doing it. There's no requirement to allocate an absolute equality of airtime to opposing sides of the referendum debate during editorial coverage. The guidelines require broadcasters to ensure that the proportion of airtime allocated to both sides must be fair to all interests and undertaken in a transparent manner. Okay. That sounded to me like it wasn't fair. And then secondly, the guidelines clarify the requirement to ensure that the total time allocated to political party broadcasts will result in equal airtime being afforded to parties that support the referendum proposals and those that oppose them. So... if it's editorial coverage, it's free for all. But if it's actual political party broadcasts, and often with state-run media, political parties get time allocated to them, which I think that's pretty much standard. That will have to remain on equal time allocation. But no requirement to allocate an absolute equality of airtime to opposing sides of the referendum debate during editorial coverage. In other words, slant it as you will.
Hmm.
And that's now the rules. So I guess we've got a yes vote coming up.
Yeah, well, eventually. They just keep running it by. I'm pretty sure they'll do one at midnight on Sunday and see what happens. So Feigenbaum's constant is what this is supposed to be. That phi, but I'm looking at the Wikipedia entry.
Still on that.
That's just one of those things.
I love it.
What's it used for? Anyway, okay.
So you had a couple clips left. Nothing we want to play.
Yeah, we can use run them next time.
What's the Vivek thing?
Well, this guy that's the CIO of the U.S. Vivek.
What is the Vivek?
Well, I think it'd be better because it's a whole rant that.
Okay, you want to do that next time then, perhaps?
Yeah, this is what's his name, Vivek Kundra. Who is this federal's chief information officer?
Oh, I saw that. Oh, I saw that panel they were doing on C-SPAN.
The guy's an idiot.
He's a total dweeb. He's like one of these Silicon Valley jackasses and dockers that walks around and talks about, one day, imagine we'll have a holodeck and you can actually just say, computer, make it look like this.
Yes, he actually did that.
I saw that. I'm telling you, we've been watching C-SPAN at the same time again, John. Why don't you just come over here and live with me? Do you have that? I didn't hear you. I did. Hey, Mimi, did you hear that?
Yeah, she'll give me crap about it later.
You don't have that that actual clip, do you?
I might have the holodeck one. I got two clips, but I got a few more lined up, so it'd be better if we talked about them next week.
Get the holodeck clip, because that's just hilarious. And that guy is a total dork. He's like an Indian Anthony Robbins. It's weird.
He's terrible, and he says weird stuff. Yeah. In fact, his sentences make no sense, and he just rambles about stuff. It's a bunch of buzzwords.
And he rambles and rambles, and then he winds up his point, and the audience is like, huh?
At the end, his last final point, there were two real geeks that were kind of sitting there on the panel, and they were looking at each other like, is this guy insane?
Answer, yes, he is completely insane. Vivek, that's right. I saw that exact thing about the broadband bill or something. Yeah. Incredibly important we have broadband. Yeah, all right. All right, bro, thanks. Cool job. Good gig. See you on the holodeck. Coming to you from the minimum security containment cell, which houses the Crackpot Command Center in San Francisco, Gitmo Nation West. I'm Adam Curry.
And from Silicon Valley North, with a reminder to try to get us some grants, go to Dvorak.org/NA and try to give us some funding. We need it. And also sign up for one of our fabulous dinners that we're going to do probably first in Las Vegas. I'm John C. Dvorak.
We'll talk to you again on Thursday with another episode of No Agenda.